This is Proof of Decentralization. I am Chris Bleck, and on this episode, we're discussing Tallyho, the new DeFi wallet alternative to MetaMask. My guest is going to be Carolyn Reckow of Thesis, who's behind the development of this community-built DeFi wallet. But before we get into it, I am happy to say we have our first sponsor here at Proof of Decentralization. It's the Tornado Cash community. We all know privacy is a human fight. We can't just afford to roll over and give it up, nor should we be expected to. The Tornado community gets this, and they work hard to ensure that DeFi users get access to the privacy that they need. That you need. You listening to this. We all know how transparent Ethereum is, and in some cases that's great. In other cases, not so great. You don't just hand out copies of your bank statement to your neighbors, right? So why should we be expected to want our entire Ethereum transaction history visible to all of our neighbors all the time, the entire world, actually? Tornado gives you the tools you need to maintain some semblance of privacy on Ethereum. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, my friend. You can learn more about Tornado at tornado.cash. Always double check those URLs, by the way. It's TORNADO.CASH, tornado.cash. Hey, Carolyn. Thanks for joining.
Hey. Thanks for having me.
I'm joined by Carol. Is it Reckow? Did I say it right?
It is.
Okay, Carolyn Reckow, who, you know, the topic today is the Tally wallet, which I saw, I believe, has been rebranded at some point to Tallyho, right? So I don't know if that was the name all along, or we'll get into what it actually is, but I wanted to first start by, because you've had a pretty interesting journey. Like, I want people to get an idea of just like how you got to the point now where you're the person who's sort of talking to me about a community developed Ethereum wallet. Like, what got you here?
Sure. So I got my start in very early Ethereum. I was one of the first employees at Consensus in early 2015. When I joined, Ethereum hadn't even launched yet. I think it was a few months before the Genesis block. So I really saw the early days of Ethereum at Consensus all the way through the first bull run, I'd say. It was in early 2018, after about 3 years that I left Consensus. You know, when I was there, I was director of ops. So I worked across the mesh, as it was called. So in a lot of different projects, a lot of early projects, helping them get launched and like the resources that they needed to succeed, or, you know, do R&D, whatever it was in those very early days. And then I decided that I wanted to get a more experience in a bit more of a traditional startup environment. The ecosystem that Joe Lubin created with Consensus was, you know, incredible opportunity, got a lot of stuff off the ground, but it was unique in that it didn't have the same sorts of, I don't know, kind of like incentive mechanisms that you see in normal, like constraints and things like that in normal venture-backed startups. I actually went and worked for a Bitcoin only, some might even say a Bitcoin maximalist startup, Casa. So back then, Casa was run by Jeremy Welch. Now Nick Newman's the CEO, and listeners may be familiar with Jameson Lopp as the most famous Casa founder. That was a really interesting jump for me. So Casa is a wallet and a security product. They also had a Bitcoin node at the time. And I'm really grateful for my time there. I spent a year at the company and helped them launch their first two products. I was head of client services, operations, and I learned so much about kind of the flip side of the crypto space and the adversarial thinking of Bitcoiners, something that I really latched onto and admired. And I think, you know, brought back the opinion that the Ethereum community and the larger crypto community can really learn a thing or two from that type of adversarial thinking. But I did make the leap back into the broader multi-chain universe, Ethereum being kind of the biggest, still the biggest, and went in 2019 when I joined Thesis. Definitely really the only player. That was right around the time that DeFi was becoming a thing. And I joined Thesis to work on TBTC and the Keep project. Keep and TBTC are their Thesis. Thesis is also a venture studio, kind of like Consensus, but much smaller scale. We only have a few projects. Their first project was Fold, the Bitcoin rewards app. And mm-hmm. Keep and TBTC are their second project. TBTC is a Bitcoin bridge on Ethereum that's completely decentralized. So think, if WBTC is like your centralized version of a USDC kind of thing, then the comparison that is TBTC is sort of like DAI.
Right.
And I joined and was, I think that's when we met, actually originally in New York. And I was working on BizDev for TBTC V1 launch. Since then, Thesis has launched Saddle, which is an AMM, another DeFi project. And now I'm working on Tally. Tally Ho, this is a Web3 wallet, a browser extension, similar to MetaMask. And we've launched a community edition that you can test out, but the actual DAO and the big Tally launch is coming very soon.
Okay, that's a great summary. So just to get it right, Thesis is a parallel to Consensus, only in that it's a venture studio. Mm-hmm. Some people came in with money, created Thesis. They're like, we want to fund all these different projects that work towards a common goal, which for Consensus was really, sort of a Consensus has a unique point of view, which I want to get into a little bit later, about their vision of Web3 and about the world with Web3. Like, what's Thesis's kind of worldview, or is there a mission of Thesis?
Yeah. So Thesis is a pretty small group. Matt Luongo is the CEO, and we've got just a handful of other folks actually at the Thesis level. And I guess we think of ourselves as, entrepreneurs that are like the founders of each of these startups. And we're finding a little bit of product market fit before we're saying, okay, this is a good bet. Let's pull in the founding team to take it, from zero to one. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I would say that Matt and Thesis and our vision at the studio level is probably a bit different than Consensus is. If you go to thesis.co, our site, you'll see that we've got... I think it's called a monetary maximalist, like a manifesto piece that Matt has written that I think is a real good summary of some of our principles. But basically, what we believe at Thesis is that we're only going to be building products that further the empowerment of the individual, because that's what we believe that decentralization, cryptography, Web3 is all about. You're never going to see us partnering with a bank or building some sort of corporate private chain. There's a lot of interesting work out there being done around that, but that's just not something that we're going to be doing or launching.
Okay. And this is being recorded, right? And you just said never. So just be aware.
It's up on our site too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's been my take though. Like you said, we met a couple years ago when you guys were first building TBTC, and between TBTC and the new Tally project, the sense I've been getting is that Thesis is kind of bringing and based on what you just said too, Thesis kind of bringing a little bit of that Bitcoin mentality to Web3, whereas Consensus doesn't quite have, that's where I saw the differentiation between sort of two different visions, whether you guys agree or not is a different story, but that's sort of what I saw. And because with TBTC, I know the whole idea there was, and I know Matt is a Bitcoiner, who basically is bringing his ideas to Web3, and he doesn't want to compromise on decentralization, at least from my experience, you know, with TBTC. So it's important, I think, that the reason I bring this up early in the conversation is because I think that it's an important aspect of the alternative to MetaMask that you guys are building. Because for those who don't know, MetaMask is wholly owned and operated by Consensus. And Consensus has become a massive force in Ethereum. You worked there for, you said, 3 years, right? Very interesting 3 years, because it was a different time for Consensus, whereas now there's only a handful of projects going on in Consensus. Back then there was like 30 or so. It was like wasn't it kind of like a huge difference before they sort of cut a lot of the projects out?
Yeah. I don't know a ton about the technical details of the transition, but I do believe now that proper Consensus has just a few big products like Infura and MetaMask that they're pushing. But they do still have sort of like a maybe a more R&D arm that they call the Mesh that includes some of those projects that back when I was there, it was all just one place.
Yeah. Okay, so as far as Tally, and is it correct to call it Tally or Tally-ho? What are you guys branding it as?
So Tally-ho has always been our kind of long form name, because we went with branding that was a little cheeky, and you've probably seen the hound. And so it was sort of like an old timey English fox hunt reference.
Yeah.
Tally-ho.
There's dogs everywhere. And
Yeah. And we had been going just by Tally for a while because it's easier, but we decided to officially kind of do the rebrand tweak and say, hey, it's confusing. There's several other Tally projects out there. There's Tally Capital, there's Tally the Governance Project. So we just made it official and said, okay, we're going to go by Tally-ho.
Okay, let's see if it sticks, right? Well, for this conversation, we'll call it Tally-ho. And by the way, it's TH, first two letters of thesis, so there's something there. Right? I don't know if you noticed that or not. at some point you might want to play with that. I'm a marketing guy from before, you know, so pre-crypto. So what led to the idea here? Like, what led to the creation of Tally? Like, what did you guys see in the market that said, like, we need to do something in this space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're in the space, you know MetaMask. It is by far like the behemoth in the wallet space. Every dApp, especially as DeFi has been taking off, like MetaMask is step one if you're going to be onboarded into Web3. And, you know, for sure, like Web3 probably wouldn't be where it is today without MetaMask. You know, like they got us through that first ICO boom and like the CryptoKitty craziness. Like I remember I was at Consensus at the time and like, CryptoKitties almost took MetaMask offline. Like that team, like hauled ass. Like it was really impressive to see. But you know, we've come a long way from them. The ecosystem has changed, and it's kind of wild that there hasn't been a serious MetaMask, you know, contender out there. So that's kind of one thing. Really, what started to get it was just Matt's juices flowing is that he noticed in this was August of 2020 that all of a sudden MetaMask changed its licensing. So it took down and no longer had like free and open MIT, like open source licensing. And Matt took note of that. He thought that was interesting. he's the type of person that's like in there looking at code bases regularly, I guess. and then a couple months later, MetaMask launches MetaSwap. And I think most of you are probably familiar. If you're familiar with MetaMask, it's the in-wallet swap with DEX feature. What a lot of people don't know is MetaMask is taking a really huge cut on MetaSwap. There's as much as I'd say like 1%, right, per transaction that's taken sometimes. And over, you know, the next year or so, MetaSwap started taking in sometimes as much as like tens of millions of dollars in fees monthly.
I believe like it was actually last year, $150 million mm-hmm. in swap fees is a number that I believe they put out. I have a note here about that. But it's a huge amount of money, $150 million just in the commissions that people are paying on top of their regular swap through the MetaMask tool. So yeah, it's huge.
Yep. We noticed that, and a few other people noticed it. There was some maybe tweets about it, but you know, largely, you know, it was quiet for a bit. And that was when, yeah, Matt decided, let's start building a competitor. Let's build something that is DeFi native, that has just some basic improvements in the experience for a DeFi user. I think one of the things that I talk about as an example is just having native DeFi tokens already in the app. So your C tokens, your S tokens. In MetaMask, you may have noticed if a new token that you hadn't used before lands in your wallet, you have to go to Etherscan, look up the contract, add it. It's just not a great user experience for anyone in DeFi. You know, there's been a lot of bugs around like Ledger, around hardware connections and difficulties there. So just the idea is let's build a wallet that has, you know, baseline, better features, slightly better experience. You know, there's a lot of things you can do with a wallet longer term, but the initial vision was let's launch something that's a bit of a better experience. And also let's launch something that gives back to its users and gives back to the community, people that are using it. Because despite the fact, you know, MetaMask has got millions and millions of users, tons of people using swaps, the users are not seeing a dime of that profit, right? And so, yeah, the idea is let's launch something that is fair launched, that has a DAO, and where the users and token holders can directly benefit from the success of a product.
Yeah. When it comes to venture studios in this space, like Consensus, for instance, would you say it's fair to say that, and honestly, this is just tech startups in general over the last like 10, 20 years. A lot of them start up, they try to fill a need. They try to acquire users, retain those users, and then eventually maybe stumble into a profit center of some sort. Like a lot of times they start with an idea, we're going to generate revenue this way, but then they figure out, oh, well, we're actually generating revenue over here, so let's pursue that. Mm-hmm. And with MetaMask, for instance, I doubt there was a launch with the idea that this is how we're going to make money in the long term. But all of a sudden, swaps come up. They decide, you know what? Let's close source this. Let's use this as our profit center, not just for MetaMask, but for Consensus, right? This is a huge profit center. $150 million a year is nothing to sneeze at. And it's more than enough than MetaMask alone needs to operate. So it's really funding a huge part of that venture studio. But do you think that the swap feature and the profit that's coming in around it, do you think that's the real core of the business for the long term, is as far as MetaMask goes? Do you feel like that's what they think this is going to do for the company?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I'm definitely not the person best equipped to answer that. You know, I think that another interesting factor in the timeline here of, you know, MetaMask going closed source and swaps launching and all of these interesting product changes, not long after, you saw MetaMask raise its first major fundraise, you know, JP Morgan coming in. And, you know, I've done fundraising before, and I know that you need to be able to show potential investors, right, some revenue and some business mm-hmm. models like you were just speaking about. So I'm sure the two of those things are connected. I can't say longer term like what the MetaMask team and Consensus is thinking in terms of business.
Yeah. Models. I guess I'm thinking more in terms of like Web3 wallet browser extension, you know, specific type of interface for Web3, because it's obviously a big profit center right now. And I'm kind of wondering, like, in the long term, is that really where they see the opportunity? Because, you know, we've seen MetaMask Institutional mm-hmm. start to be developed, which is a huge opportunity for Consensus to sort of service big banks and other institutions out there that want to play in the space. But yep. Tally saw the opportunity that MetaMask sort of discovered with swap fees inside of the wallet, and discovered as far as Web3 goes, because obviously there's plenty of wallets out there that do swaps, Web3 or not, right? As far as Bitcoin wallets and stuff like that. But for Tally, it's an opportunity because, like you just said, the revenue that's generated there could be sort of diverted back to the people mm-hmm. that are using and participating in governance and stuff like that. Whereas MetaMask is just keeping it. And they have said, right, that they plan to maybe airdrop something at some point. It's kind of like up in the air. And I think they're kind of worried about a bunch of issues, obviously, you know, with airdropping anything right now. But why, if MetaMask sees this as a way to sort of cover expenses and stuff, how does that work for Tally and Keep and Thesis? Because, like, why would it be different? Like, a venture studio is a venture studio, right? So, like, why is how is Thesis different in this regard? Why is it just a philanthropic thing? Like, let's give the money back and we don't need to make any money? Or is there some kind of revenue split you guys are seeing? Or how would that work?
Yeah, so there's going to be more details about this coming out. And actually, if you visit our forums, too, there's a more detailed proposal that talks about the Tally DAO and how it might interact with, the Tally product team. Your question was more on, the biz model side of this. Tallyho is going to be a fair launch. And I can't talk too much more about the details of the launch because it is coming up soon. The plan is for, Tallyho Thesis is not going to be taking like a cut of those tokens off the bat at launch. It's going to be a true fair launch. There's going to be different elements from some of the different fair launches that you've seen over the past DeFi summer until now. So there's Merkle drop element. There's some liquidity mining elements. But the idea is that the Tallyho team would love to continue to work on this. And there's a few different proposals or ways that we see this happening. I think one parallel might be the way that you see, I think Zcash is a good example, but I think I'd also like to, zoom out and think about the way that a lot of different open source projects have contributors. Where maybe that there's initial team that built it and kicked it off, but in a really real decentralized future, it's not just one team that's working on the wallet. I like Zcash as an example is because there are now other teams that are contributing. It did start out as one team, and there's the founder's reward that has shifted over time with governance. Don't know exactly what's going to happen. There is a little bit of a leap of faith that we're making that, the community does decide to keep us on and, compensate us to be the dev team. But we'll see, right? These are new models in Web3. Okay. Yeah.
Right. And we've seen it before a few times, mm-hmm. but, the general idea here is, like you just said, It's challenging in this space for a venture studio or a company of any sort to participate in open source software and still be able to generate any kind of revenue to cover its expenses. Or, look, Thesis is a for-profit company, right? It's not a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Just like Consensus, it's the idea of companies in most countries is to generate profit. So when we see software development happening, even on an open source level, there's still got to be some plan for money to come back to the company, or else what are we doing? Why are we paying people to develop this stuff? And this is not common. This isn't even unique to Web3. Linux and other mm-hmm. open source mm-hmm. ecosystems see the same issues. But in Web3, there's a unique opportunity, which I think is what you're saying is happening here, where, you know, Thesis has a team, a Tallyho team, yeah, that comes up with the idea for this wallet, presents it to the community, develops it, makes it open source, allows it to be forked, allows, mm-hmm, you know, sort of keeps it open, you know, open source free license is out there, unlike what MetaMask has done, like you said. And then I guess the challenge is, you know, and I understand that there's nuance to this, but the challenge is, how can your team guide this into a place where the community sort of latches on and takes over, you know, whether it's a DAO or otherwise, and then decides without too much influence to kind of hire the original team as the development team for these, this open source application. And being that, you know, if they're hired by the DAO, they could also be fired by the DAO, right? And the DAO, sure, could choose a new team, you know, and, mm-hmm, sort of take it in a new direction. But in the birthing phase, like, who better to develop the thing than the people who came up with it initially? Is that kind of, am I getting it right? Like, yeah. I understand there's a lot of nuance to it, but is that the general
idea? That's the general gist. And, you know, we're hoping that there's going to be a lot of teams working on this, you know, certainly not immediately right off the bat, but if we've done our jobs right, there will be, and there already are, you know, contributors, you know, folks that have jumped in and, you know, ETH Denver Hackathon and have, you know, built, like, for example, our Wallet Connect integration and a lot of integrations with dApps. And so there's already a robust like collaboration going on and contribution from the community on the dev side, but also on marketing and like partnership BD work. It's been really great to see. And the other thing I'll add is we are going to be launching and partnering with Gitcoin's Aqueduct. So I'm sure folks are familiar with Gitcoin. Aqueduct is just a new mechanism for protocols to be directly funding Gitcoin type grants. So we've pledged to have 2.5% of the supply go into this Aqueduct. And so that's another way that we're decentralizing and thinking about, you know, how, you know, our team as well as other teams might be able to contribute to development. Yeah, moving forward.
Okay. 2.5% of the supply of what? Of a token that you guys, yes, are going to launch?
We're launching, okay, it now, and gotcha, we're launching a token.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there will be a DAO. There will be a token.
Yes.
There's already a Tally team, mm-hmm, that is employed by Thesis, right? That's developed the initial product. I'd like to get into incentives a little bit because, and that we've already started to go there, but, you know, it's important. I think that the incentives of everybody involved need to be clear. Consensus is a different story where, you know, like I said, it's a for-profit company. There's nothing going back to users. The incentive there is really, when you look at it on an economic level, to generate profit for the company, to attract new investors, to build for institutions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But for people involved in this project, you've got people who obviously are incentivized to work for Thesis, right? Thesis pays some salaries there. But then you've got people in the community who are developing and who are contributing with a different incentive, you know, and I would assume, maybe you know better than me, like their incentive would be, okay, maybe I can be a part of this token launch or, you know, mm-hmm, this DAO in a more meaningful, powerful way. Maybe people will vote to pay me eventually if I perform better in these early stages. Do you think that's the right idea here?
Exactly. Yeah. And this is, okay, I mentioned the kind of governance forum post that we've got up on our discourse. It just went out the end of last week. That's a great resource if you're really curious into how our community and our team has been working together to think about, okay, here's how the governance structure is, the different like teams. We've got very cutesy dog names for our teams. We call them packs, dog packs. Here's how the packs will, mm-hmm, spin up and here's how voting will work or could work. You know, it's all kind of up for review and discussion right now. But yes, generally what you're describing in terms of contributors, you know, whether they're putting forward like code, helping with integrations, helping with marketing. There are definitely a few community leaders, moderators, and, you know, groups of folks that have been putting in the work. And I you know, thoroughly expect there to be proposals put forward and grant programs developed around that.
Okay. Yeah. And I have reviewed that, and I'll put links to this stuff in the show notes so people can like go straight to it and see what's going on. So, this, 'cause this proposal is very specific and thought through, with regard to like how the DAO will look, how it will operate. I assume it's up for a vote or something like that. Right. I'm not sure how this, so this, did this come from the community or did this come from like members of the Tally team at Thesis?
Both. So, I guess the initial draft was drafted by a community manager, a community design manager that actually came from our community, was a community member first before we said, ooh, you're amazing, let's hire you. There are several other community members out there that are just as amazing that we didn't hire because we understand the importance of keeping that balance. But anyway.
It's like, you're so good, you're not getting a job, sorry.
Right. Yes. You're so good. Please stay in the community.
We need to keep you over there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So yes, the time to put into actually put a lot of the thoughts and the conversations that have been happening down on paper happened from the team, but it was like a thoroughly collaborative process over months. The feedback has been coming in and, this is okay. Something that, yeah, definitely both sides.
Let me ask you about that. 'Cause it's like, you've been in this space for a long time, you've seen a lot of changes, mm-hmm. You know, you've seen the evolution of the way DAOs have evolved and, you know, just the ideas around the space. So now in 2022, we're in this sort of space where DAOs are coming up, technology is changing, and we have regulators looking at things, and we have, a framework that's slowly developing around all of this stuff as far as regulators and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So is this kind of, because it feels a little bit, and this isn't unique to you guys either, it's just, it feels a little bit like a balancing act as far as, you know, you've got the company, you're trying to form this open source movement, but you're also trying to sort of protect the company from being too involved with what should be open source. And like, you know, this is like the quiet stuff that's not talked about a lot in the space, but like, as far as your involvement and stuff like that, like, is that like, are you guys constantly meeting about how can we do this without pushing too hard or without making too much, or using our influence too much? We want the community to decide on their own. Is that a constant like topic conversation?
Definitely. And that's a conversation that I'd say that we are having with a lot of our peers in the space. It's like you said, it's not just us. There is this question of, you know, how obviously decentralization is the long-term goal. You see this work with, you know, open source software, but it can be a little bit different with these Web3 models where you're bootstrapping community in such, I don't know, like quick way, right? And the incentives are very different than just plain old open source software and contribution, public goods contribution. We have a lot of great conversations with folks like at, you know, ENS and Gitcoin and other groups and, you know, folks that have been, you know, trying out this, you know, governance by DAO. It's not something that I've got a quick, snappy answer to. There is the age-old like tension between, okay, if you decentralize too quickly, does it become, you know, decision by committee and sort of some of the inefficiencies associated with like bureaucracies, like all of that kind of stuff can kind of come into play. Versus on the other side, you know, are you just paying lip service to decentralization in the DAO?
So with regard to the Tallyho wallet itself, is MetaMask kind of your benchmark initially? Is that like your starting point, and then you hope that it branches off in a different direction from there? Is that how you guys are considering it?
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. So in terms of the wallet that we're launching right now, our MVP, we want it to be at feature parity with MetaMask. So anywhere that you can use MetaMask, anything you can do with MetaMask, the intention is for Tallyho to also be able to do. We're also launching with some other new features, and there will be more after the DAO launches that we plan over the next few months to roll out. Yeah, it's architected somewhat similarly to MetaMask, but not exactly the same.
Okay. Do you think that MetaMask is kind of nailing it as far as what users need in this space? Or do you think that there's things that Tallyho is like kind of thinking about or has pinpointed that can be improved upon, or features that it's missing or anything like that?
That's a big question. Do I think that MetaMask is nailing it? No. Do I think that anybody is nailing it in the Web3 space? No. I guess there's sort of like two answers to your question. One is for like seasoned DeFi users today, is it nailing it? What are their wallet needs? And then there's the larger question of all Web3 users, people that are new to Web3, people that are maybe coming in this most recent sort of hype cycle, is a browser extension and just the MetaMask UX easy, intuitive, nailing it? The answer to that high level one is no. And I think that there's a lot that everybody in the space could be doing, both for, better UX that results in better security outcomes, and also just more accessible and understandable and easy to use and pleasant to use UX. Zooming back down to the kind of everyday DeFi user, there are definitely some things that we think MetaMask can be doing better. And in particular, we targeted this DeFi user, right? And I mentioned, I think earlier, around support for like native DeFi tokens being just default, having that metadata already in the wallet. There's also some things that we're going to be doing to like optimize for gas costs, and more accurate like gas estimation. Having a ledger, a hardware wallet integration that works too is great. And the additional feature that we're going to be launching with is called Tally Earn. And essentially, it will be a place for you to earn yield directly in wallet. So trying to make it as easy, right, to farm, to lend, borrow, have access to yield opportunities like directly in wallet, as easy as like, savings accounts kind of things in Web 2.
Right.
But that's, yeah, we definitely still have some bigger UX issues to solve around wallets and key management. It's not an easy one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like you said before, like when MetaMask was in its early days and CryptoKitties time and stuff like that, and they were just frantically trying to, develop something that would be useful mm-hmm. to people in the space. And now fast forward, like, has it been like 5 years since CryptoKitties? I'm not even sure. Like 4 years, maybe?
Wow. Yeah, four and a half.
That was like 2018, was it, I guess? I don't even know. But
2018.
It all blends together after a while. But, the thing is that anybody in this space who's been around for any period of time has never known any different experience other than using a browser extension as your wallet. I mean, there's some now variations on that where you've got like the smart contract wallets, you have mobile wallets, you have other mm-hmm. means of accessing Web3, but predominantly people who are busy in the space are using this experience. So do you think that this is the way it's going to be for a long time? Like, is that the idea with Tally that like, okay, we've already identified that browser extension wallet is the way to go. It's really the only way we know right now. And maybe the only way the tech will allow. Yeah. And to a certain extent, even that DeFi has been built around that idea, right? With all mm-hmm. the web apps that exist. So is that, do you think like for the next like 2-5 years, this is what we're going to be doing?
Well, I definitely don't think that the browser extension model is going to go away. Like you said, it is what people are mostly familiar with. But when it comes to security, it's important to, think about the space in the sense that like having a monoculture or sort of a one size fits all approach is just really bad for security, right? So we shouldn't have a space where everybody is using your end user owned account type MetaMask in browser model. Even though that can be made more secure with things like Ledger and Trezor, it's still like just choosing one thing, right? And we shouldn't be moving to a space where we're only using smart contract wallets. And there's definitely been some really cool things that you can do when you're architecting something in that way, right? Superpowers like account recovery, right? Gnosis, Safe is an example of a smart contract wallet. You've got that like that multi-person kind of account thing with the multi-sig. But that's why we've decided to go with a bit of a hybrid approach. So we're both similar to MetaMask in that we have this single signature and user-owned account element that you see in MetaMask or you see in hardware. But we do have some smart contracts in there, right? Because we are doing a bit of an extra thing. But we're not launching with everything. I think it's interesting. The mobile side, I think, is going to be huge. And that's going to be important for onboarding, the next several million Web3 users. Having kind of a full page like browser version also has some interesting like security concerns, right? The browser is definitely an adversarial environment if you're building in it. And that's why for this first release, we're not shipping any full page mode yet. So that's not something that we're leaning into, even though some people may be familiar with that or accustomed to that. It's just something that's inherently less secure. So we're definitely thinking about security, but a best practice around security is kind of using lots of different models. So you're not in this like monoculture of one type.
Yeah, there's been some hacks and exploits over the past couple of years of MetaMask users, right? Whether it's been like with keyloggers or actually most of them are phishing attacks, where hackers or attackers can fool people into disclosing information. If you mention MetaMask on Twitter, you get like bombed with bots that are pretending to be MetaMask support. And they're predominantly trying to just get people to disclose their seed words to their wallet, which once you disclose those seed words, the attacker has everything you have in that wallet and in any accounts in that wallet. Mm-hmm. Is Tally like thinking about that? Is that sort of top of mind? Are there any potential solutions for these kind of things? Or is it just something we have to deal with as long as we use these kind of wallets?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's a great question. And yeah, this is definitely what I was thinking of and alluding to, some of these larger like UX and security issues with wallets is that, a wallet is only as secure as its user. User error is often, one of the biggest things and most dangerous things to interacting with crypto. But that's no excuse, right? Like we can't just be a bunch of hardened crypto, freaks saying like, well, everyone just better learn and toughen up. Like, no, we have to protect people that are coming into the space and build products that are just inherently less obtuse and give you more information about what exactly it is that you're doing on Web3, and what it exactly it is that you're interacting with when it comes to a smart contract, right? So a lot of these recent hacks have been because people are just sort of accustomed in their flow to like, yeah, you visit a dApp site and you allow MetaMask to connect. And so you're, or you're just saying yes to sort of some sort of smart contract approval, you know, MetaMask notification that comes up and you're like, oh, okay, yes, whatever. And the problem lies in that, you're not actually able to read what's happening in that smart contract. And there aren't sometimes, you know, notifications, if, you know, maybe you're revisiting a site and the contract is different. There's a lot of different use cases here, or potential edge cases. And, you know, one of the things that we're looking at with Tally is improving notifications, including more notifications, just more information about smart contracts that you're interacting with. So you can, you know, make better informed decisions around, okay, do I really want to click connect? Do I really want to transact with this smart contract? And that's something that, you know, we need to be using tools beyond just like wallet tools. It goes deeper down in the stack here. And there's a lot of projects out there and folks thinking about this. One is Sourceify, the Ethereum Foundation's like funding this team to just create a, it's like kind of a service of like metadata around smart contracts. So you can like plug that into your apps and just have more information about exactly what like this smart contract is doing. Is this smart contract like actually what I think it is? Is it, you know, verified? So yeah, there's a lot of like kind of more protocol level, infrastructure level developments here that we're hoping to plug into to make the experience safer for users.
Okay. Would you say that's like a, is that going to be more of a focus for Tally than it has been for MetaMask, would you say? Because as you're saying this, I'm thinking like, why hasn't MetaMask already done this stuff? Like, is it just so hard to get right that they haven't been able to figure out a way, or have they just not spent enough time on it?
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know. It's not definitely not easy being MetaMask. MetaMask is, it probably has is the most used product in Web3. And it's you know, one of the earliest products. You know, I don't have a ton of insight, even though I was at Consensus in the early days, and in the very early days, worked closely with the MetaMask founders, and they're, you know, excellent people, definitely like Web3 aligned values, kind of open source values. But I don't know, things change, culture changes when companies scale, and there's different stakeholders, you know, coming on board. And yeah, it's hard for me to say exactly why, but I do think that, yeah, scaling trouble, and just some of the pains in growing an org and growing a product org, you know, aren't making it any easier to tackle some of these things.
I guess what I'm getting at is, there's other Web3 wallets out there, that have come from a variety of sources, and some are open mm-hmm. source and some are closed source. But none of them have really been able to pick up a ton of market share. Sure. And most of them have not been at, like, I've tried most of them, and most of them, for one reason or another, just don't have all of the things that I need the way that MetaMask does. And MetaMask doesn't have everything, but it seems like it's the most robust tool that we have right now to access DeFi, right? So I guess what I'm getting at is why should we think that Tally would be different if it's coming at it with like less resources, a sort of a community approach, which is great, but mm-hmm. also often community approaches and DAO approaches are like less efficient than centralized corporate sources, right? So like, what makes you think that Tally is going to be a better product than MetaMask?
Yeah, so it's really, you know, you already said it, the community owned aspect, that's the big mm-hmm. differentiator. One of the things that we did when we first started out, we were prototyping as we went around to all of our friends, you know, just regular DeFi degens, friends, people that were running DeFi dApps, DeFi projects, and we asked them, like, you know, for you as a user, for you as a DeFi project, as a dApp, like, what are your wallet pain points? If you could build your dream wallet, what would it have? And we got a lot of interesting answers, you know, some of those things, like the little features that I mentioned about making DeFi experience smoother, like, you know, native data and better gas, you know, also things like better L2s, more organic shifting between chains there. And that's something that we're working on. That's kind of like a coming later piece. But I think the most interesting thing that we heard was that nobody, either from MetaMask or any other sorts of, like, often, you know, infrastructure services that they rely on to run, nobody had ever asked them this before. And I think that that's the beauty of a community-owned project, is because when it's community-owned, like, you can have a say and you know, actively work to create the product that you need as a user in the DeFi ecosystem. And that's both like a user, like, you know, you or I with DeFi, but also, you know, different protocols and dApps that, you know, rely and plug into, you know, this dApp stack.
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And in MetaMask defense, years ago, I was part of a focus group or something like that. So they did ask me what I wanted. But some of it, you know, some of it got, I mean, it was a focus group type of a thing. But it's much different from dealing with a DAO or dealing with people in a forum demanding something, especially when they own tokens that give them some sort of representation in the project. And by the way, one thing I didn't ask about the tokens is, and I know, I guess your launch is coming up and you guys haven't really talked a ton about it yet, but is the idea that the members of the governance community would somehow participate in fees from some swap tool like MetaMask?
Yeah. So exactly. Right now, actually, Swap, we launched it not too long ago, and it is collecting fees. And right now, all the fees are going to a community multisig that we set up because the DAO isn't live yet. But yes, the plan is that there's a shift from that multisig into the DAO. And, you know, the swaps feature is not the only way that, you know, the wallet has a revenue source and business model. So that's something. It'd be interesting to see if the community has other ideas for that moving forward. That's definitely
a, so it's, you know, it's going into like a treasury, and then the DAO has to determine what to do with the treasury, so to speak. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
It's not just gonna, like, you buy the token and you get a share of the fees. It's not like that. It's like it's going into a pool, and then it's gonna be up to governance to potentially decide what to do with this money.
Roughly, yeah. And it's sketched out in the governance post in a bit more detail if you're curious.
Oh, okay. I'll look at that in more detail. So another aspect of what is happening here, I think, has to do with the idea of censorship resistance. And I know that on some of the Tally-ho literature I was looking at, it talked about using Pocket Network as the node, you know. And for those who don't know, Pocket Network is basically a decentralized alternative to what Consensus owns, which is built into MetaMask, which is Infura. And in order to use your wallet app to interact with DeFi, there needs to be an RPC node in the middle. Okay, so your wallet app can't just talk to Uniswap. It needs to interact through a node. And you can run your own node, but you're 99.9% sure you're not doing that, right? So, like, you need to use somebody else's node. MetaMask by default sends you through Consensus's own node, which is called Infura. They own a bunch of nodes, but it defaults you through their system. But it looks like Tally Ho is going to by default use Pocket Network. Is that going to be a default choice in Tally Ho?
So we're actually in the process of integrating with Pocket right now at launch, and now our main partner is Alchemy. When we launched, when we were designing the MVP, we knew that we didn't want to use Infura, because even though that is, kind of the industry standard, almost all dApps use Infura. They're sort of the first, and another team, similarly to MetaMask, Ethereum and Web3 ecosystem would not be where it is today without, the work that these teams have done and paved the way. But again, to my earlier point about monoculture, it's just dangerous, right, to lean into one provider and to have this one stack that kind of makes Web3 a bit more centralized. So we knew we wanted to go with a different team. Alchemy is the other big giant in the space. So we saw this as a step towards just providing more choice, being a bit more resilient in the ecosystem. But the plan was always to move towards decentralized options. Pocket is a project that is more recently launched. And yes, it's a decentralized network of RPC nodes, essentially. The plan is to be having them support us and give the option, right, once that is live, of which type of node you want to connect with, whether it's, if you're Alchemy or Pocket.
Okay. I mean, the reason I brought it up in context of censorship resistance is because just a few weeks ago, Infura basically revealed by accident that it had the ability to geo-block users based on government requests or mandates or sanctions. Mm-hmm. And apparently they hit a switch that managed to accidentally block all users in Venezuela based on their IP address. So it wasn't like you go to a website and you're blocked. It was like you log into MetaMask and you can't do anything as long as you're connected to the Infura node. Now, MetaMask does let you set a different node. It lets you switch your node, but the default selection is Infura. And if you're new to the space, or if you don't know everything about RPC nodes and all this stuff, you're kind of stumped. You're kind of in a spot, especially if you have to do something quick. Like if you're about to get liquidated and all of a sudden you're geo-blocked because Biden sanctioned some country, you're not in a good place at that moment. So Alchemy would run the same risk, right? Because this is a real problem we're starting to see pop up in the space as far as these centralized entities that run nodes being forced to comply with these types of sanctions. So it's kind of the same problem that we might face with Tally and Alchemy, right?
Yeah, I'm actually not familiar with Alchemy's policy on this, but it does stand to reason that they are a centralized company, so that could be a risk as well, which is why Pocket is something that we are working on integrating and actually probably will be the first update after we do launch to have that option. And it's an interesting point you have about a default option, because you're right, if you're a newer user in the space, you may not know about RPC nodes. And I'd like to think that, yeah, that's the direction that we'd go in with the product, to make the most decentralized option the default one. I think so.
It would be really interesting to sort of, because this is such an important part of the under the hood stuff that happens in DeFi, that there's zero education about for new users, even though it's right there in the wallet. Like, you log in, and I don't think you guys have the option yet to switch nodes. I didn't dig that deep. I saw that it was basically mainnet right now, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. It's something that is going to happen more and more. We're seeing sanctions all over the place. Regulators are starting to look. Infura is building the functionality and testing it so that if a request comes in, they're able to just block, you know, and even they know, like, okay, a user can just switch to Pocket or switch to something else in order to keep interacting with DeFi. But there's no good, there's nothing about that in the UI, right? Nothing at all. So if I were part of Tally's governance, or which maybe I will be, who knows, that would be something that would be top of mind for me, because there are DeFi users all over the world that are having to sort of suffer the sins of the government that they live under, you know? And mm-hmm. Part of what I think we're trying to do with DeFi is to include everyone. So it'd be interesting if that became part of the user experience with Tally, you know, as far as giving people more information about the nodes that they're using and things like that. But do you, you know, is this something that is a primary sort of focus for Tally, you know, or is it kind of just something that maybe we'll focus on? Like for now, let's just focus on getting the wallet out the door, et cetera, and then we'll worry about these types of issues later. Or is this something that's really like right there for you guys, front and center, as a selling point for the wallet?
Yeah, no, censorship resistance is definitely front and center for us. It's front and center for everything that we do at Thesis. You know, that's, to us, that's a big part of building things for the empowerment of the individual, right? Censorship resistance empowers folks to, to have that freedom on the internet. And sure, we're working towards a launch and we are kind of in let's get it out there mode. But you'll see, we've got a blog post about our partnership with Pocket, and that's like high on our list in terms of like getting that going and having censorship resistance and a more just like robust, generally, it's just a better practice to have more providers. But one that is like a truly censorship resistant provider is like very much so top of our list.
Yeah, we've been seeing like in the past, we're recording this on April 1st, 2022, April Fool's Day. And I was trying to come up with an April Fool's joke to play on you, but I couldn't think of anything good. But the past week, we've been seeing a lot of news about like crypto anti-money laundering type, that's what they call them, laws in the EU that are, you know, they're basically targeting wallets. They're targeting the ability of users to interact and to send crypto without being forced to give up their privacy entirely. And it's getting closer and closer to becoming reality in the EU. And people have talked about it here in the US too, and a lot of different countries, you know, because it's kind of crazy in the context of everything that the governments are doing that we still have the ability to interact without being forced to give up like our identity and to identify all our wallets and stuff like that. So are there any conversations going on about how those types of rules or regs might affect your development? Like, would you be potentially forced to include functionality that would like identify people at any point or anything like that? Or is that not even on the radar yet?
I think it's a relevant and it's a good question. And I think the sort of thought process that we go into is, there's an element of, well, how do you regulate a DAO? That sure, there's some work being done in the US. I know like Wyoming maybe is probably the furthest along there, but that's something that's still, doesn't have like clear answers or a clear responsible party that you could point to. Granted, like Thesis Inc. And the development team and some of the, you know, business model and structural elements that we were talking about earlier, there's a bit more of a risk on that side. But when you're thinking about the wallet as a truly open source project that is truly decentralized, governed by a DAO, is this public good? I'm not sure how you would regulate a DAO and this type of open source software.
Well, the DAO is going to hire the, you know, potentially like the Tally team that's employed by Thesis, like to do the development so that they could be regulated, right? Like the development team. But then the DAO could in turn fire the team if they did say, hey guys, now we're going down the regulated path. We have to do X, Y, Z. DAO severs that, but then the DAO has to somehow coordinate to find some other development team. I assume, all, like you said, everything's open source, so they'll have all the code, but it would be sort of unprecedented, right? To like have to transition to that regard. Yeah, this is something that we need to start thinking about as a community, you know, because it's coming. Like we've already seen, for those who don't know what AOPP is, like there's efforts out there to basically, it exists already, like a protocol that would seamlessly identify you to an exchange, like when you want to make a deposit. And really this only matters with regard to when you're interacting with a regulated entity. So like a centralized exchange, potentially DeFi applications if they become regulated, which some of them seem to be sort of opening up to that idea. And then it's going to be interesting to see how wallet apps sort of develop and which ones capitulate and which ones don't. But I have high hopes for Tally-ho, Carolyn. I do. I think it sounds like a really promising step in the right direction. And, you know, breaking up the sort of MetaMask monopoly is important, you know. And like you said, we wouldn't have what we have today if it wasn't for MetaMask. But at the same time, we can't just let it sit there and just
continue
competition
is healthy.
It's yes, competition's healthy, and so is censorship resistance and the choice of the user to decide how they want to handle their relationship with all this stuff. So, but hey, thanks for joining. And like I said, I'm going to put links in the show notes to all the stuff we talked about, and really encourage people to check it out. The product is still in early stages. I think it's like in an alpha stage still, right? But it's developing quickly. So it's definitely worth keeping an eye on and supporting, and maybe jumping into the governance forum and checking it out. So thanks again for putting up with all my annoying questions.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure. This is great.